I thought I would speak today about a topic that I'm going to be in a very expanded form addressing over the Thanksgiving weekend in Seattle, the topic of Lord Kapila Dev and his instructions to Devahuti, at least part of it. And I think the section that I was contemplating sharing with you is before Lord Kapila Dev appears, even before Kardama Muni marries Devahuti, who is the father of Lord Kapila Dev and what are his great qualifications and the exchange that he had with the personality of Godhead, where the personality of Godhead informed him that the Lord would appear as his son. In modern America, and I can tell you it's not only modern America, in modern China also, yoga is very popular. Yoga this, yoga that, yoga the other thing. Very popular. But what yoga is, they really don't know. Or as Prabhupada would say, this they do not know. So, in Satya Yuga, the process for achieving spiritual perfection is meditation, meditation. And with meditation, the system of yoga, and the system of yoga that Kapila Dev taught was Sankhya Yoga. It's not go to a yoga class. There's benefits, health and mind, and at least in some cases, to some degree, the quality of the modes of nature are lessened in the lower region and moved into the mode of goodness region, to some degree, but not necessarily. But the real system of yoga, as it's intended, Dhyan yoga or Ashtanga yoga or Sankhya yoga, it's a very elevating and elevated process, and the results are correspondingly very elevated. So, spend a little bit of time with Lord Kapila Dev, who is the son of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. He's in the category of Shakyavesh avatar. That's described in the end of chapter 7 of Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is a summary of, that part of it is a summary of Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Sanatan Goswami when it comes to the categories of avatars. There's 6 categories of avatars. And it's not the movie version. It's forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. And Kapila Dev is a Shaktyavesh avatar. And Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Have you heard of that title before? It's a literature written by Rupa Goswami. Laghu means light. And his elder brother, Sanatan Goswami, wrote Brihat Bhagavatamrita. So Rupa Goswami, taking a humble position, wrote Laghu Bhagavatamrita. And Laghu Bhagavatamrita is one way to describe it is it's a expansion of the Mahavakya verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Mahavakya means principal utterance. Mahavakya. The primary verse that the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam rests on. One verse. 18,000 verses rest on. This is a very powerful verse. Eti changsa kala pungsan Krishna's tu Bhagavan Svayam. Meaning Krishna is the source of all avatars. Which is very amazing because in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Suta Goswami is asked by the sages headed by Shonaka Rishi to describe among six topics, one of those is, please describe the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. To oblige them, he does. And he lists avatars. And amongst the avatars of Vishnu, because at the beginning of the chapter, the Purusha avatars, one of the six categories, is Purusha avatars, forms of Lord Vishnu for the purpose of creation. And then the avatars appear within creation, so then the other five appear, and one of them of those other forms of the Lord as they appear in that which is created by Lord Vishnu are avatars of Vishnu, as stated in the Vishnu Purana, Padma Purana, and other sattvic literatures. But the Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana, spotless Purana, amongst the sattvic Puranas. What does that mean? It means that the mode of goodness, you Bhagavad Gita scholars will know this, the mode of goodness is mixed with passion and ignorance. The mode of passion is mixed with goodness and ignorance. The mode of ignorance is mixed with goodness and passion. And the modes are competing for supremacy. Right? From Bhagavad Gita? So where you have the mode of goodness, please know, there's also passion and ignorance competing for supremacy. So, Amala Purana, or Shuddha Sattva, is goodness that's unmixed. What's goodness that's unmixed? It's transcendence. And therefore the Bhagavatam is transcendental literature. And in that transcendental literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, the statement is made by Suta Goswami, authored by Vyasadeva, that amongst those so many named avatars of Vishnu, one of them is the source of all of them. What does that mean? It means that Krishna is the source of Vishnu, and he appears as an avatar of Vishnu. And for him, that's not a problem. Lots of things for Krishna are not a problem. For example, Krishna can be bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest at the same time. That's not possible. You can be big, but you can't also be small at the same time. You can maybe change and be big and then be small and then be big and then small. But you can't be simultaneously big and small unless you're Krishna. Krishna is so big that all of the universes emanate from him, and not even emanate from him, they emanate from a portion of a plenary portion of him. And yet, as the universes are emanating from him, he is within every atom of the universe at the same time. Anor aniyangsam anusmarid yata. Or, Krishna is so big. That's one of the ways that he's so big. He's big and small at the same time. Smallest and the biggest. No one can be either one because Krishna has them covered. And he's both at the same time. Another is that Krishna is so big that from him so many complete units emanate from him and he's not reduced. Not at all reduced. You can't think of something that's so big. You take away something and it's not reduced. Nothing material is of that quality. Krishna has that quality. He's fully spiritual. He's transcendental. And the Bhagavatam is transcendental literature that's describing the transcendental position of Krishna as the source of all avatars, which he is one of. He causes himself to appear as an avatar of Vishnu, although he's the source of Vishnu. And for Krishna, that's not a problem. So one of those categories, in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, it's an expansion of that one verse. And so it describes, as the sages asked Sutta Goswami to describe, he describes in the first chapter the incarnations of Vishnu from Canto 1, Chapter 3. And then he goes through and from Canto 2, Chapter 6 or 7, another list. And he just presents those verses. Then he goes back and goes to other sources from the Vedic literature to describe the incarnations of the Lord. And then he goes through the categories of avatars and goes into it more deeply. And then he goes into it more deeply. And then he goes, there's no bottom. But he calls it Laghu Bhagavatamrita. He describes, there are different categories of Shaktivesh avatars. There's four categories, and of those four categories, some of them have subcategories. It's very, how far is he going to go with this? And one of them is a category in which Kapila Dev appears. And it's a category where the fullness of the potency of the personality of Godhead, this is the Shakti Avesh, Shakti Avesh, a jiva that's empowered with all the potency of the personality of Godhead in a particular category. But that's one of the categories. Like Narada Muni is a Shakti Avesh avatar because he's bearing the Lord's Bhakti Shakti. He's very powerful. He has the full potency of the personality of Godhead to deliver devotional service. And boy, does he deliver devotional service. And we're in his line. So get your bhakti vessel out to catch some of that bhakti shakti of Narada. Or the four Kumaras. The four Kumaras are Shakti Avesh avatars that are bearing or exhibiting, receiving and giving the Gyan Shakti of the personality of Godhead himself. Not just they're learned, smart, they've got multiple PhDs or something like that. They're bearing the Lord's Gyan Shakti in fullness. So that's one of the categories of Shakti Avesh avatar, but the category in which Kapila Dev falls is they exhibit this category. There's some different characteristics. They exhibit a expansive teaching on spiritual subject matters, exhaustive, detailed teaching on spiritual subject matters. Generally, they exhibit the renounced order of life. Generally, they're ascetic by nature. Dhanvantari is one example. He who gave Ayurveda. Or Dattatreya is another in this category. Renounced, ascetic, deep, profound spiritual teachings that leave your heads scratching, what's he saying? Because it's beyond the intellect to penetrate. It's not that kind of knowledge. Not based on scholarship. It's based on realization of vast subject matter in detail that in the end it reveals the personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the source of everything that exists. Now, Krishna says it in Bhagavad Gita, but in a different way. So he's a different category. He's a Leela avatar. But he also presents teachings. Anyway, that's Kapila Dev, who taught Sankhya. So when I go to Seattle, I'll be speaking about just a portion of his teachings over the whole weekend. I'm really looking forward to it, so I'm just sharing some of it with you ahead of time. Sneak preview. And even before Kapila Dev appeared, Lord Vishnu told his father that I'm going to appear as your son. So let's talk a little bit now about his father. Who is the father? I mean, who can be the father of the personality of Godhead? Answer, nobody. He's the father of everybody. He has no father. But in Leela, he takes the position of son of someone who is his very dear devotee who has that particular bhav, vatsalya bhav, parental affection towards the Supreme Lord. Where does parental affection come from? It doesn't just come from a biological combination of a mother and a father. Primordially, it comes from a relationship with the personality of Godhead. Because it exists in the spiritual realm, its counterpart is here in this realm. And the father of Kapila Dev was situated in that bhav. I'm going to read something from... There was a question last night about... Ashray was asking. Reading something from the Bhagavatam where you wonder... He was saying he sometimes wonders, why is this in the Bhagavatam? What does this have to do with realization of the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, Krishna? So there's a little section of, for example, lineages and descendants within that lineage. Maybe interesting to some people that like lineages, but why is it in the Bhagavatam? Because it's in relation to the personality of Godhead. And similarly, so the sons of Brahma. Okay, we're interested because we're in the Brahma Sampradaya. What about the rest of the people that aren't in the Brahma Sampradaya? They're not in his lineage. Why would they be interested in who are the sons of Lord Brahma? Let's just talk about Krishna. Because one of these sons of Lord Brahma, actually a number of them, one of them being Kardama Muni, was a direct son of Lord Brahma. He is pure devotee. And he had, as his son, the personality of Godhead. So we're interested. And the father of Kardama Muni was a pure devotee, the head of our Sampradaya. He received knowledge, complete knowledge of all of the Vedas and manifested it through his mouths, through his four mouths, the four Vedas. And then instructed his sons what that knowledge is, and they in turn passed it on, and so on. So it's very important for us. I'm just going to read a few verses where the process of sub-creation. There's 10 topics in the Srimad Bhagavatam, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And two of those topics are Sarga and Visarga. Sarga is what Lord Vishnu does to bring the unmanifest into the manifest state. And Visarga is what Brahma does to take that which Lord Vishnu does and puts it all together, the chief engineer. He was not only a civil engineer, mechanical engineer, electrical engineer, this engine, what all the engineering needed to create a universe. He was the super professor. And he didn't have to go to school. He just did tapasya for a long time, and the Lord gave him that knowledge within his heart, because his heart was pure. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye. So in the process of Lord Brahma appearing as the direct son of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, he then gets the inspiration to create a universe, because that's his service. So from within his heart, the Lord inspired him. So he already has self-realization. Why does he need to go around and create a universe? Because the Lord has given him that impetus to do so. And he's a servant. So he serves that way. And then it describes step by step the unfolding of the universe. After all the elements of the universe, all the principles of the universe, the blueprint, the master plan, all the implements, everything is there. And he just puts it all together. Just puts it all together. It's very, very sophisticated, put it all together task. So, the four Kumaras appear, Lord Shiva appears, and the next appearance are the 10 sons of Brahma, great rishis. I'm going to read that section. This is from Canto 3, Chapter 12, starting with text 21. About 8 verses. Brahma, who was empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thought of generating living entities and begot 10 sons for the extension of the generations. Begot doesn't mean with his wife. He just, from his body, he produced sons. You know anybody that can do that? And listen, from the different parts of his body that he produced sons. Here's the names. Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulascha, Pulaha, Kratu, Brighu, Vashishta, Daksha, and the 10th son, Narada, were thus born. Narada is born from the deliberation of Lord Brahma. We don't have the projector, so I was going to project onto the screen a picture of Lord Brahma and the different parts of Lord Brahma's body where the Kumaras, Lord Shiva, and these 10 sons. So from the deliberation of Lord Brahma, Narada was born, which is the best part of his body. Vashishta was born from his breathing. Daksha, from his thumb. Brighu, from his touch. And Kratu, from his hand. Pulascha was generated from the ears. Angira, from the mouth. Atri, from the eyes. Mrichi, from the mind. And Pulaha, from the navel of Lord Brahma. So in the painting, very nicely, I remember when this came out and Prabhupada was very pleased how the artist had rendered. He gave them the idea and they took the idea and manifested, and it's very visually powerful. So from the different parts, Brahma's in a lotus posture with his foreheads looking in different directions, and by his ear is Pulascha, and by his thumb is Daksha, and so on. Sage Kardama, husband of the great Devahuti, was manifested from the shadow of Brahma. Doesn't give the technology, it just says he did it. Thus, all became manifested from either the body or mind of Brahma. Some time passed from chapter 12, canto 3, going into chapter 21 of canto 3. Lots of things happened in between. Lord Brahma says to to Karnava Muni, as he said to the others. I've brought you into this world from my own body to assist in creating different varieties of living entities. Please assist me. And so the answer was, yes, sir. And you've heard this before, but listen carefully again. First business was to qualify himself. You've given some service. The answer may be, yes, sir, or yes, Prabhu, or yes, Maharaj, or yes. Then prepare yourself. Maybe you've already prepared yourself, but be sure that you prepared yourself. If you've given a nice service, to do a quality task. And so Karnava Muni decided that he would go to the forest and engage in the Yuga Dharma. It's Satya Yuga. It's just the very dawn of creation. So he goes to the forest to perform meditation. Meditation doesn't mean go to yoga class and look at a candle or a spot on the wall or a mandala or empty your mind or something. Yeah, it was at Northwestern University right here in Chicago. We asked, was it here? No, excuse me. It was at Tufts. It was at Tufts University in Boston, where a group of students and asked them the title of the presentation that I was asked to work with was Mantra Yoga Workshop. So it sounded nice. Some people came. And I asked them, have you ever done meditation? If so, please describe it, what your experience was. And all but one had done some meditation, and none of it had to do with anything that's found in the Vedas. But, you know, this teacher taught this, and that teacher taught that, and something, something. And none of it had to do with mantra meditation. So the real purpose of meditation is not just fix the mind, but fix the mind on Vishnu. Even the processes that help you fix the mind, mechanically fix the mind, is to fix the mind on Vishnu. So that's what Karnava Muni did. He fixed his mind on Vishnu. And remember, he has this natural inclination. His spiritual identity, his spiritual service to the Lord, is in parental affection. He's very pure. He's very elevated. He's not like us. He's meditating on Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu appeared right in the forest, riding on the back of Garuda, and came in for a landing. And got off Garuda and stood before Karnava Muni, he offered very beautiful prayers, describing the features of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the merciful nature of the Lord, and then he disclosed his heart. Here he is in the forest, not pretending to be a meditator. He is meditating on Lord Vishnu. And he wishes to serve Lord Vishnu by having as his son a form of Lord Vishnu. He's meditating upon Lord Vishnu and serving him in that rasa. So here's Lord Vishnu speaking to Karnava Muni in the forest before Karnava Muni's married. He's a bachelor. Yogi. The Supreme Lord said, having come to know what was in your mind, I have already arranged for that which you have worshipped me well. through your mental and sensory discipline. My dear Rishi, O leader of the living entities, for those who serve me in devotion, by worshipping me, especially persons like you, who have given up everything unto me, there is never any question of frustration. The emperor, Swayambhuva Manu, the son of Lord Brahma, of course, Kardama Muni is also the son of Lord Brahma, but it's his older brother. Swayambhuva Manu is also directly born from the body of Lord Brahma, along with his wife. That was a very interesting arrangement. Brahma's got to have a creation. He has to have somebody looking after it. So he creates the person to look after it, Manu. And just manifest him from his body. And not only him, but his wife. And they're in their mature stage of life, ready to go. Do the Manu program. And Shatarupa. Brahma's powerful. And so is Manu. Because he's got to look after the whole universe. That's a big service. Take care of your family. That's a big service. Okay, take care of the temple. That's another big service. Take care of the universe. Inconceivable. How qualified is Manu? The emperor, Swayambhuva Manu, the son of Lord Brahma, who is well known for his righteous acts, has his seat in Brahmavarta and rules over the earth with its seven oceans. He also rules over the universe. The day after tomorrow, O Brahmana, that celebrated emperor, who is expert in religious activities, will come here with his queen, Shatarupa, wishing to see you. He has a grown-up daughter whose eyes are black. She is ready for marriage, and she has good character and all good qualities. She is also searching for a good husband, my dear sir. Her parents will come here to see you, who are exactly suitable for her, just to deliver their daughter as your wife. How's that for a four-year information text message? That princess, O holy sage, will be just the type you have been thinking of in your heart for all these long years. She will soon be yours and will serve you to your heart's content. She will bring forth 9 daughters from the seed sown in her by you, and through the daughters you beget, the sages will beget children. This is the personality of Godhead speaking. Lord Brahma had a plan, and Lord Brahma's plan is, of course, has the endorsement of the personality of Godhead. That's actually, he's the hand behind all of this, and including this. With your heart cleansed by properly carrying out my command, resigning to me the fruits of all your acts, you will finally attain me. He's already attained him. There he is, face to face. But you will come to my abode. Just as Krishna says in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you fix your mind upon me, intelligence always engaged in me. Surely you will live in me always, without a doubt. So he's saying the same. Showing compassion to all living entities, you will attain self-realization. Giving assurance of safety to all, you will perceive your own self as well as all the universes in me and myself in you. What? All the universes and me in you. and my, excuse me, in me, and I'm in you. So, all those things are in Krishna. Kardama Muni and all the universes and everything are within Krishna, and Krishna is within Kardama Muni, from within his heart. So, by that meditation. So he likes, pure devotees like meditating on the personality of Godhead. By the process of meditation. But it's not, that process of meditation is not separate from devotion. That process of meditation is not separate from devotion. There are processes of meditation that are separate from devotion. Meaning, what do you do once you have fixed your mind upon the Supreme Lord, even have seen the Supreme Lord? What do you do? Just see the Supreme Lord? Or do you engage in his service? And the instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is both. Fix your mind upon me and engage in my devotional service, or engage in your prescribed duties. And Kapila Dev, the son of Kardamoni, teaches the same, and Kardamoni is doing the same. He's a pure devotee, he's not just a meditator that wants to get away from the harassment of stuff and become peaceful inside and don't care about the world, just care about being peaceful inside. That's not Kardamoni. It's not the process of achieving spiritual perfection, even in Satya Yuga. That process of meditation is with great care and concern and effective uplifting of all others. Text 32. O great sage, I shall manifest my own plenary portion through your wife, Devahuti, along with your nine daughters, and I shall instruct her in the system of philosophy that deals with the ultimate principles or categories. And that's the end of the Lord's conversation. So before anything happened, he already knew what was going to happen. And that's because he's a pure devotee, and the Lord had a desire. The Lord had a desire to fulfill his devotee's desire. But the devotee has a desire to fulfill the Lord's desire. It's a loving relationship. So what does, in this third canto, there's, we'll just say, these three topics in greater detail than presented in the prior portions of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. The principles are the same, but more detail on sarga, the Lord's part in the process of creation through the agency of an expansion of Lord Vishnu, and